It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 95% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And before we get into things, there's just a couple of announcements. First of all, thank you, everyone who listened to the Carl Kiesel podcast. That was a really, really good podcast. The Kickstarter is doing very well. It's about at 65% of goal, so I think it could really happen. So there is a link on our Facebook page directly to the Kickstarter, so you can go and donate if you decide that you want to read it. I really want to read it, so I'm plugging it again.
When does it end?
It ends in 2 weeks. It ends in June.
Oh, I think he'll make it.
So I think so, too. But they also have some, like, with stretch goals. And one of the ones that makes me really excited is that they will make it a hardcover.
That I'm very excited about.
If they get some more money.
Yeah, I always spring for the hardcover whenever possible.
Yeah, so good luck to Carl Kiesel. And anyone who's joined the show since then, welcome. One of the other things I just want to mention in some sad news, which is slightly geek-related, but Chris Cornell passed away this week, who's the singer of Soundgarden and Audio Slave. Yeah, and, you know, like Robin Williams, the suicide ones always tend to hit me hard. What hit me was that, really, this was the same thing Kurt Cobain went through, and Chris Cornell kind of made it another 25 years. I think we're 23 years away from the death of Cobain. And it's just another indication that, you know, there's no cure and it's an ongoing concern. So, you know, obviously I don't land on the point of like, oh, why don't you just understand that life is good? Why don't you just cheer up? And what a selfish act. And it's like,
I think things are a lot more complicated than that. And typically, my experience is the people who say stuff like that maybe don't have any history with depression, right. So they don't really understand, I think, what that struggle is like. And, yeah, I mean, it's rough sometimes. You know, I think it's an awful reminder that this is kind of a big problem that we still, as a society, have, like, no scope or idea on how to talk about.
Right, and my career's taken a turn in the last couple of years where my advertising career has been mostly about mental health drugs. So I've been seeing stories like this all the time.
Yeah.
But when somebody so talented who, again, the cliches seem to have everything like Robin Williams, but this guy was built like a god. Like, he was one of the most handsome guys. He had a voice that was unreal.
Yeah.
Geek-wise, he was an incredible songwriter. He wrote one of the best James Bond songs ever in Casino Royale, the first Daniel Craig.
Oh.
It's Chris Cornell's. And he has a song that closes Avengers.
That oh,
lifts
yeah.
rise over the credits. So there is some geek credentials. I know sometimes, like, when we talk about music or comedy, we have listeners that are like, why?
Yeah.
It's because I have...
We have to justify
it. I have very
but
few
do we?
But there is some geekness. But, you know, it's just a tragedy. I mean, he played a show that night.
Yeah, I guess that's, like, the most surprising on my end. I don't know anything about music. I'm living, like, a cultural vacuum. But, like, he's on all the radio and everything. Was talking about him and... They're saying it was like right after a show and he was in his hotel room, and it's just like, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and his wife was saying that she thinks it was an overdose of Ativan, which they say, you know, one of the warning labels is that it may lead to suicidal thoughts. However, Ativan is prescribed for people with depression.
Yeah.
And any mental health drug kind of has a threat of suicide on it. It's called a black box warning, because when you see the print or the website, there's a big black box written around it, and everything's in bold. Like, look at this.
Yeah, so you don't miss it.
When a drug is potentially dangerous.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's like the cigarette warnings, you know? It's like,
yeah.
This causes cancer.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's crazy that the cure for depression is antidepressants.
It's more depression, yeah.
Yeah, that can... It's,
well, we don't know...
We have no idea.
We don't know how the brain
it's
works.
Horrifying.
And the reason I found it, working through this, the reason I found is you can never... open up a living brain. As soon as...
Not yet.
No, as soon as you go into the brain, you're dead. So we can see where all the connections are. And for the most part, we give people pills and they go, hey, now you're acting different.
Yeah.
So I guess it works. And, you know, tolerances happen and there's a lot of problems with side effects. So it's just...
And everyone's different. There's a lot right. that goes into it. And, you know, that's what I think is like... there's a lot of antidepressant drugs out there. There's a lot of different people say different things help and everything. And I don't think there's a silver bullet that cures all of it. It'd be nice if there was, but I think it's like, it's a huge problem. And I think it's a...
I'm not going near the fact that you use silver bullet as an analogy for depression.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's ongoing and it's a struggle. And my heart goes out to anyone who's dealing with it. And it's something we're just going to have to keep dealing with. But that being said, our topic today is Alien Covenant, which Steven and I both saw on Friday, mostly because I just wanted to go see a movie.
Yeah.
I went through a thing.
Honestly, if you didn't ask, I probably wouldn't have seen this movie.
Yeah.
Aliens isn't like it's like we've talked about this before. Planet of the Apes is like a franchise I forget about until there's a new movie. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a franchise I've completely forgot existed and like pay no attention to. I never look forward to, you know, I'm not like, well, when's the next Planet of the Apes movie coming out? I can't wait to see what happens next. It's like, well, we know where that whole thing's going to go
right.
with the Statue of Liberty and the, you know, the beach and everything.
Yeah, I'm the same way where every time there's a new Alien trailer, I go, oh, look, a new Alien trailer.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to see it. Am I going to go out to it? Prometheus, I did not go to.
Yeah, I did see that. And I think that was more of like for X-Men First Class had come out like a few years before that. And I was like, oh, Michael Fassbender's next like big movie. I really like this guy. And so that was when I went to go see that. And yeah.
Yeah, and he's in this as well. Obviously,
twice.
Yeah, obviously they're spoilers. He's in a dual role. If you've seen Prometheus, he plays the robot. He plays the robot again in another model of the robot. So there's a lot of Fassbender in this.
Yeah, with a different voice.
There's a Fassbender on Fassbender fight.
There is a Fassbender on Fassbender kiss.
There is.
He kisses himself on the lips.
He kisses himself.
It's very
like,
strange.
Like Hulk Hogan used to.
Hulk Hogan used to do that?
He used to kiss his biceps.
Oh, no, this is a Michael Fassbender kisses another Michael Fassbender
on the face.
On the lips.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very strange.
So, we haven't talked about it at all. I went through a period very recently, and I think I mentioned it on the show, when Bill Paxton passed away a couple months ago, my first thought was, man, I really want to watch Aliens again, because he's so great in Aliens.
Yeah.
Like, he goes from badass Marine to crybaby at, like, at the turn of a switch, and just stays there for the movie. So I watched Aliens again just to kind of remember him. And then I was like, oh, my God, Aliens is such a great movie. Let me watch the original Ridley Scott. And then by that point, because I'm me, I'm like,
all
right.
But I have all these other ones.
Yeah, let's watch the David Fincher one, which isn't that good, where Sigourney Weaver has a bald head. Let's watch the Joss Whedon one, which is terrible because the director hated Joss Whedon and threw away his script. And then let's go buy Aliens vs. Predator, which I know is bad, but I can get them both on Blu-ray for $8.
Right.
So I went through all of the Alien movies very recently, and then Prometheus was on FX. So... I watched Prometheus again, and initially I didn't really like Prometheus, and watching it a second time, my opinion softened. So I was kind of looking forward to seeing Alien Covenant, which seemed like it was going to be Prometheus, but closer to what Alien was.
Yeah.
So what did you think?
I was whelmed, you know?
Yeah.
I wasn't overwhelmed. I wasn't underwhelmed. I was just whelmed. And it... Here's the thing. I saw Alien 1 when I was like a teenager, and I saw Alien 2 when I was like a teenager, and that's it. And then I saw Prometheus when it came out, and I probably haven't seen either the first two Alien movies in like 15 years, probably.
Oh, really?
Really.
There are movies I end up watching probably every 5 years or so.
Just, right.
I own them, and every now and then I'll go, I haven't seen those in a long time. But it's not like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or Marvel
right.
or Batman where it's like every year I end up watching them.
Yeah, and I really like Ridley Scott. I think he's like a really good director, but I think he's made a lot of stinkers lately.
Yeah,
because
he's not consistent.
No, because I saw that Moses movie he made with Christian Bale a few years ago, and it was awful. But then like Gladiator is one of my favorite movies ever. So
I mean, he made Blade Runner.
Right.
And that's the thing that puzzles me about this movie, and we'll get into the details, but before Alien Covenant, they showed another trailer for Blade Runner 2049, for
yeah,
the sequel to
the
Blade
sequel
Runner.
To Blade Runner with Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford.
And for the life of me, I don't understand why he decided to make a third Alien movie instead of a second Blade Runner movie when most people consider Blade Runner his masterpiece.
Yeah.
And, you know, he already went back into Alien and made a whole new thing with Prometheus. So, you know they wanted him to do it, and he's listed as the producer of Blade Runner, so he's involved.
Yeah.
So there came a point where he was like, Aliens and Blade Runner, all right, I'll pick Aliens. And
do you think he just likes Aliens more, like, personally? I mean, I get why we're like, well, it's a really crazy decision, because, like, one is, like, the sci-fi Citizen Kane, and the other one is, like, just a good sci-fi horror movie. You know, Alien is, like, basically a horror movie in space.
Yeah, my guess is neither one of these he created. I mean, he made the first film, but the first Alien was written by Dan O'Bannon, who had a writing partner, which eludes me for the minute. Because all I want to say is Joe Shuster, and I know that's wrong. Yeah,
that is incorrect.
The artist of Superman. But it was written, the original Alien was written as a spec script, and Ridley Scott got his hands on it and made it. Blade Runner was a Philip K. Dick novel.
Yeah, that's the Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yeah,
right?
Which is a totally different book than the movie.
Yeah.
It's like The Shining in a way, where the movie is so different from the book and so good
yeah.
that it's its own thing. Again, which is why Blade Runner seems to be more of his creation than Alien was. So why he would decide to let Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford go off by themselves while he makes a movie with Michael Fassbender and Danny McBride and the girl from Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
After seeing Alien Covenant, I don't know.
Yeah, it was like identical to Prometheus. I mean, other than they had the xenomorph running around, it was the same movie. We went into space and we found the thing, and you know, the girl gets attacked and everyone gets infected, and it's just
well,
the
first Alien's kind of like that too,
but the first Aliens was an original concept, you know what I'm right. saying. This was like the fifth or sixth or seventh Alien movie, and it's a remake of the same movie.
Yeah, we're at eight if you count Prometheus as an Alien movie.
Yeah, I count it. I mean, this movie confirms that that's in continuity.
Right, and I think maybe the reason he made this movie was because Prometheus was so confusing to audiences. I remember seeing...
Because they didn't really know what it was, yeah.
Right, because when it was being made, they said, this is the prequel to Aliens. And then as they wrote the script, they were like, actually, it's not about aliens at all. And then when it came out, they were like, okay, it's kind of about aliens. And what it was Prometheus is really about the race of space jockeys, where in the beginning of the first Alien, when they go into the ship, there's a giant calcified guy. Remains in like this big astronomer control system. Right. And then the eggs are around there, and we never get back to that. But it was a design. It was one of Giger's designs, as well as the Alien, that people were always fascinated with.
Yeah.
There's even a mini-mate of like the space jockey in that observatory. And so Ridley Scott wanted to tell the story about those aliens,
and that's fascinating, like that,
and it is. But then people were confused. They're like, well, is this about aliens or is this not about aliens?
Yeah.
And then at one point they said it takes place in the same universe, but then even as a film, the trailer completely baffled me. If I'm getting the years right, I feel like I saw it at Avengers. There was like the first trailer, and it was just like shots of like Charlize Theron and Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what it was. And then when I saw it, I did not go to see it, but I rented it, and I still didn't understand it. And it wasn't until seeing it again and then watching Alien Covenant that I was like, oh, that's what
here's
he was trying
how it to say. Fits in. Yeah.
And maybe that's why he made Alien Covenant. Maybe he was like, yeah, nobody got what I was trying to do in Prometheus. I really love this film. They want me to make another Alien movie. Maybe I can help to explain what Prometheus was.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like half of Alien Covenant is kind of recommending you to watch Prometheus.
Yeah, but these movies are really frustrating for me. Like I said, I liked Alien 1 and 2. I never saw anything else beyond that except for Prometheus.
They go downhill really quickly after that.
Yeah, now that's probably why I've never taken the time to watch them, is I've heard enough awful things about it. But like, the movies always, they not only do they have the same formula, it's like, they're very frustrating movies to watch, because like, this is partially why I'm not a big horror movie fan, aside from like obscene amounts of gore and stuff, which I'm not a huge fan of, is that like, everyone's so dumb. And it's,
yeah,
it's frustrating to watch a movie where, you know, they, all right, we're spoiler territory, okay? They get this signal to a planet, whereas the planet that Michael Fassbender and the girl from the first Prometheus movie show up and go, and they're gonna like, we're gonna kill these aliens.
Yeah, it was Naomi Rapace, who was the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Okay.
So she's in all those films.
So they go to this planet because they want to release this predator alien thing on the species that originally created both man and alien.
Well, yeah, that's slowly revealed during the movie. So what I didn't understand about Prometheus is what I gathered from watching Prometheus twice and watching this again, the connection between the space jockeys and the aliens is that the space jockeys did that seating of the gods idea of that. This theory is that there's one alien race that went to all these planets and put their DNA
created
on these planets,
life.
And yeah. We're all related.
They
back
basically
to one
went
race.
To any planet that had a liquid water, they jerked off into the ocean and left.
Pretty much.
You know, it's like essentially the plot of these movies.
And I believe that goes back to novels, but I've seen it done in Star Trek, The Next Generation, and I've seen it done on The X-Files. So it's a theory that's around.
That's a solid sci-fi theory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that's good sci-fi material for how life spreads throughout the universe.
So Prometheus is about who those aliens are, and it seems like what I gathered from multiple watchings is that they created all of these races. They looked at the human race and went, nope, and then created a biological weapon to wipe them out.
Yeah.
And that's what the alien is. So for years, everybody was saying, let's do a movie where we go to the aliens' homeworld and figure out who they are. Like, the aliens are always attacking spaceships.
Right.
Where did they come from? Because even in the first Alien, they obviously weren't born on that planet. And the second aliens, they were brought to that colony.
Right. But so they're saying is that there's a planet where the aliens, the xenomorphs, have a home world where they grew and evolved and just like Earth.
Yeah, but it turns out what Prometheus is that's the space jockey's world, is that they grew those in a lab. And
right.
It's a biological weapon which uses the victims to replicate itself.
Right.
So it kills humans, but then it saves some humans to impregnate and make more aliens.
Yeah, it's like a way for these monsters to reproduce. Now, that's great, and that's horrifying.
And that's why
poke a little more holes in this, is the super smart, the oldest race in the universe, thinks that it's easier to do that than just create, like, you know, a disease that maybe is spread from human to human by, like, something we like to do, like having sex, and it has no cure, and it's just like, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's much easier to just create HIV or AIDS give that to us.
In this movie, they add that because there's the airborne capacity where...
Right.
Where they're not, in this one, for most of the movie, they're not face huggers. They're these spores.
Yeah, that you breathe in or they go in your ear.
Yeah, and there's like a super close up of it going into a guy's ear and like going into the tissue of his ear. And then he starts coughing and eventually he has a chest burster, which comes out of his back.
Yeah.
Which seems like the harder way to get out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bones.
A lot more bones than the sturdier bones of the body.
So it does have that. But I mean, obviously having a scary looking alien rip out of you and then attack other people is a better visual than just a contagion movie.
Sure, and the same thing too. It's like that's the thing of aliens. You know, the thing popping out of the chest they redid in this movie. You know, because it was like that's an iconic shot. I think that's an Alien too.
It's a trope. It's in all of them. It's
where the guy
first
comes out of the chest. Okay.
The first victim is John Hurt.
Yeah.
He's the first guy that has the chest burster come out.
Yeah. He's great.
Ah, yeah.
But
we lost him.
But.
This last year.
Oh, yeah, you're
right.
We
mentioned it. He was all... Because
he was the war doctor, right?
Yeah, and he was Professor Broom and Hellboy.
Oh, yeah.
Which we're not getting a third Guillermo del Toro Hellboy. We're getting a rebooted Hellboy, which...
I don't... How do you feel about that?
I don't...
Did we ever talk about that on the show?
No, I think it came out
Let's
a week.
Let's talk about that, too.
Coming out.
This is another topic.
This will be a sidebar, but yeah, I don't feel great about it. When I read into it a little more, I understood it.
Yeah.
Because
it makes sense.
Yeah, when I posted on Facebook, I'm like, why are we rebooting Hellboy instead of making this third movie that Guillermo del Toro and Ron Perlman have wanted to make since The Golden Army? Like, doesn't the... There's not that big a fan base for Hellboy.
I don't think... it's weird to reboot a property like Hellboy. It's not like Spider-Man. Do you know where Spider-Man is this huge thing? Everyone knows who Spider-Man is. They did these three massive movies. They rebooted it into two shittier movies. And now they're rebooting it again under the Marvel umbrella. That makes sense to me.
But people know who Spider-Man was before there were movies. With Hellboy, I mean, I'm a longtime comics fan. And I've been a longtime Mignola fan.
I didn't find out about Hellboy. I've been reading comics since the mid-90s. I didn't find out about Hellboy until like 2005. 6 or something. You know what I mean?
After the movie came out.
Oh, well, like maybe a couple years before the movie then.
Yeah, like I knew it had happened because they made a big deal about this Legend imprint that like Mike Mignola and John Byrne did Next Men and Art Adams did Monkey Man and O'Brien. And it was this way to combat Image.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, all these young guys are making $1 million with their own company. Let's get the older guys who have a fan following and know what they're doing to create their own imprint of Dark Horse. And Hellboy's the thing that lasted. But I never really read it until I saw the movie, and then I fell in love with the movie, and that led me back to the book.
Those books are, Hellboy maybe is a property that's kind of below the surface for most people.
Right.
If you've never read Hellboy comics, those comics are phenomenal comic books.
Yeah, but I don't think there are any fans of Hellboy that are like, oh, I love Hellboy, but I think Guillermo del Toro and Ron Perlman got it wrong.
I agree. I don't think there's anyone that thinks that.
Right. So it was so surprising to me, but when I read into it a little more, and we posted this on the Facebook page, it seems that Guillermo del Toro, now that he's the guy that's made movies like Pacific Rim, he said his third Hellboy movie was going to cost $125 million.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted a cheaper film, and he was like, nope, this is the way I'm going to do it, and I'm Guillermo del Toro. So basically the studio was like, all right, we'll just find somebody else to make the $40 million movie we were willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
And we'll get the guy from Stranger Things to be Hellboy.
And honestly, what the fuck would you do with a $140 million budget for Hellboy? Do you know what I mean? It's like, you don't need... That budget is insane for a Hellboy movie.
But wouldn't you want to see what it was?
Oh, totally.
It would be Hellboy and Pacific Rim.
Probably, but yeah. I'm saying it's like, it's not necessary.
Yeah, but I think now Guillermo's on this level where he doesn't have to make these little quirky movies anymore.
He
wanted to bring Hellboy up to his career level.
And it would have been nice to get that. I'm just saying.
But the returns aren't there.
That's what I'm saying.
Both of those movies are cult films.
They did not do... Those movies won't justify that budget. And I'd love to see that movie.
And the second one did less well than the first one.
Right.
I think it was timing because the second one came out against Iron Man and The Dark Knight, and it came out like the same week as Clone Wars.
Yeah.
It was 2008 was one of the biggest movie years. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is that year.
Yeah.
Say what you will about that film. Made a lot of money.
It made a shit ton of money.
It got buried.
Yeah, that's 2008.
Yeah, the first film was like spring 2004.
You know what?
It came out in like March, so there was no real competition.
I've never seen Hellboy and the Golden Army. I've seen it in pieces at the comic book store on a DVD.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I can lend it to you because now I have an iTunes digital copy.
Yeah.
So if you lose it like you lose things, I'm not really going to care.
Right.
It's a little wonky. There's stuff in it that doesn't work. I don't think it's as good as the first one.
Yeah.
But there's stuff in it that's better than the first one, and it's a bigger movie.
Right.
So I could see how he wanted it to be a bigger movie. And honestly, like, right now I'm just like, well, if it's not going to be Guillermo del Toro and it's not going to be Ron Perlman, I don't want it.
Right.
But
it's going to be that guy from Stranger Things.
He's good.
He looks good, and he could be a good Hellboy. Who's directing it?
It's somebody that's done, like, some horror films. It's somebody younger who's, you know, obviously cheaper.
Yeah.
But it's got promise. But it's like, I feel like nobody was clamoring for another Hellboy movie. People wanted Hellboy 3.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it is the studio. Even if no one was even looking for a Hellboy 3, that studio, I think it's Lionsgate, is that right?
Revolution.
A Revolution?
Yeah, I think Lionsgate might have had... Lionsgate, I definitely remember on like the DVDs, and they did those animated
movies. Maybe that's what I'm thinking
of. And those
of.
Were pretty good.
Yeah, those are cool.
And Ron Perlman did like the voice of those.
The style, and I think that's the problem, is like, this is going to be a lot like if they ever recast J. Jonah Jameson. It's like, that's what this poor guy from Stranger Things has to live up to. Is Ron Perlman was a phenomenal Hellboy. He was so good, in fact, when I read the Hellboy comics now, Ron Perlman is the voice of Hellboy.
He was born for that role.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a guy that's done everything. He's, you know, speaking of his voice, he's Clayface in the Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal, and he has a great voice for animation.
He does.
You know, he's got a face for animation, too.
He's got a face for makeup.
He really does. Oh, that's terrible.
But he's great.
He was in Blade, too, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he a bad guy in Blade 2? He's a vampire?
Because Guillermo del Toro made Blade. He's in every Guillermo del Toro movie, I believe.
Did Guillermo del Toro...
Maybe not some of the Spanish-speaking ones. Guillermo del Toro made Blade 2. He didn't make 1 or 3.
Right, but did Guillermo del Toro... Did he make that Beauty and the Beast movie with Ron Perlman? That wasn't him.
No, that was a TV show.
Oh, really?
That was a TV show with him and Linda Hamilton, who was Sarah Connor in Terminator.
Yeah, I never seen that.
Yeah, it ran for a while. And that kind of...
Oh, it was a show.
It was a show, yeah.
I thought it was like a made-for-TV movie or something. That's incredible.
It ran for a while. There was a great Saturday Night Live sketch where I think Linda Hamilton was the guest. And they did an episode of Beauty and the Beast, and Phil Hartman was the Beast. And they were on a double date with another girl and, like, the Beast's cousin. And it was John Lovitz in Beauty and the Beast makeup. And they were not, like, you know, they were in a car on a date together. And Phil Hartman and Linda Hamilton were being so romantic. It was like, I'd cross the stars for you. John Lovitz. He's like, you like movies?
And it was, like, his weird cousin?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Is Phil Hartman dead?
Yes.
Yeah.
Phil Hartman was shot by his wife in a murder-suicide.
What?
While News Radio was on. News Radio is this great show that turned... It's now this forgotten cult show. Like, yeah. It's not even on Hulu.
It's another show. If you haven't seen, check it out. And I don't know anything about TV, but that's a great show.
It's phenomenal. It has Dave Foley right after Kids in the Hall. It has Andy Dick right after...
I hate Andy Dick.
But it's right after the Ben Stiller show. He's good
in
this.
I hate him.
Phil Hartman right off of Saturday Night Live... Stephen Root right when King of the Hill was starting, Joe Rogan before anything happened to him. It's got this fantastic cast, but Phil Hartman died in between seasons 3 and 4, and the last season they brought in John Lovitz to replace Phil Hartman.
Yeah,
and that season is hard to watch because it's not that it's bad, but you can tell everyone involved
it's
in
like
the
reacting
is grieving.
Yeah,
like the. No one wants to do comedy in those episodes. They bring in Patrick Warburton
at the end. Yeah, he's phenomenal. Yeah. I'll watch that dude do anything he wants to do. Yeah. In fact, that's the same thing with replacing Ron Perlman with the guy from Stranger Things is like replacing whoever's playing the Tick after Patrick Warburton did. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, Peter Serafinowicz.
They're out of their minds replacing these guys. It's iconic.
Well, I think with the... With Patrick Warburton, they said he was too busy at a show on CBS.
Yeah.
I think he was getting a little too old to fit in that suit.
Here's the thing about...
It's been 15 years since he was the Tick.
Yeah.
And it's been like 20 years since they discovered him on Seinfeld. And he's getting up there.
Totally. But this getting too old to play roles is garbage now. Because... depending on the budget, obviously, like, these Marvel movies and Star Wars can bring back corpses to play people and de-age people, but it's like, this too old to play the role anymore, you're covered in makeup. Do you know what I mean? But there's Ron Perlman could be 70 and still play Hellboy, you know what I mean?
You still have to walk around in that suit for 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
I think that's why Hugh Jackman doesn't want to be Wolverine anymore.
He doesn't have to get in the shape. It's a little different when you have to get into physical shape, I think.
I think you have to be in physical shape to be stuck
wear
in that
uniform.
Rubber suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said that Batman suit is incredibly uncomfortable. And the Tick suit is basically a Batman suit.
Yeah. But it's the only thing you can breathe through is your face.
But Robert Downey Jr. doesn't want to star as Iron Man anymore because he said it's too taxing physically. Like, yeah. Iron Man 3, he has to run around, like, dressed normally, and he hurt himself.
I think, honestly, in Iron Man 3, when they did that last sequence where he's, like...
Jumping off the...
He's like Walmart Iron Man, you know, where he basically...
He's MacGyver, right?
Yeah, he's MacGyvering it. I thought that was because he didn't want to be in a suit, and I thought they were like, well, here, we'll take you out of a suit, we'll have you make homemade gadgets. But then they had him do all this running around, and he broke his leg or whatever.
Yeah, so now, like, since... After that, Age of Ultron and Civil War, he just kind of swans through a room and tells quips, and then there's a CG Iron Man flying around,
yeah.
But he doesn't want to make an Iron Man 4 because he's in his 50s.
That's crazy.
All right, let's go back.
So back to Alien.
So apparently you didn't like Alien Covenant enough that you're willing to talk about three
anything
other
else. All right, well, okay, here's the thing. They're very frustrating movies. This is the point I was making earlier. It's like to watch them, everyone is incredibly stupid in these movies. You know, it's like they go to an alien planet and the first thing they're like, more so in Prometheus, I think they toned it down a little bit in this one, but they get to the alien planet in Prometheus and they see all these like bubbling things. And then the first thing they do is like, well, let me get my face as close to this as possible. And like, it happens a couple times in this movie. But it's like, the thing that's really frustrating about horror movies and these kinds of sci-fi movies in general is like, no one ever stops to have a fucking conversation about anything. It's constantly like, they get to this alien planet, they meet Michael Fassbender, who's like been living here, and then he takes him to this like big stadium type thing with all these corpses everywhere.
Right.
And not one person in this movie stopped him and said, hang on a second, Mike, what's with all the corpses? synopsis. Who the fuck are all these people? Who killed them all? It's like, I felt like that could have answered a lot of questions in this movie.
Yeah, it would have ended the movie. If they had taken... However, when they get there, they're being chased by a bunch of aliens.
Totally.
And he says, this is the only place they can't get into, which is never really explained.
Right. But then that's the other thing. They get into that place. They're in this big room. He's like, make yourselves at home. And then he walks away. And everyone's like, yeah, we don't have any questions for him at all. Let him leave and do whatever fuckery he's doing behind the curtains.
Well, this is the big problem with horror prequels. And, you know, Alien... are horror movies. They're not sci-fi movies. They're not action movies. They have elements of that, but they're horror movies.
Yeah.
And the problem with horror prequels, and this is the problem that everyone has with Fear the Walking Dead,
right,
is that as an audience member, you know what these monsters are. You know how characters deal with them. You know what has succeeded and what has failed. We're in season 7 of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like, when Rick sees a zombie, he does not get scared at all.
He's a pro.
Because he's just like, just hit him in the head and that's it. And as an audience member, you're with Rick.
Right.
Now you have Fear the Walking Dead where people are like, what is it? And then the zombie walks up 2 blocks and eats them.
Yeah.
And you're like, what a fucking moron.
Right.
But that's because you're back to
used to that world.
You're back to this world that doesn't have zombies in it. And that's what Alien Covenant is, where they're just like, they land on that planet and they're like, hey, I think we can start a colony here. This is a great place to have a planet. And then they immediately absorb like alien pollen and die.
Totally. But I'm with them the whole time. You know, look at this planet. It's amazing. It's in the Goldilocks zone. It's perfect. But then things start happening and you think, these are scientists, for Christ's sake. These aren't just people, right? It's like, this is a team of scientists. They get to a planet, there's all these corpses and this guy, and they have so many questions, and it just seems like they're just like, well, let's just wait until things get horrible for us and let's not ask any questions leading up to that.
And then when things get horrible, they all panic.
Yeah. And it's like,
the craziest part for me is the scene when it's coming out of the guy's back.
Yeah.
And Danny McBride's wife, like, locks them in and quarantines them.
Yeah.
And she's like, I can't let you out. There's quarantine. But she has blood all over her face.
Yeah.
I'm like,
you're infected too, lady.
You need to be quarantined. And eventually that ship just blows up and kills all of them.
Well, that's what I don't understand. So she quarantines McBride's wife with an infected alien person in a room, okay? And she's watching through...
Yeah, McBride's wife quarantines Billy Crudup's wife.
Sure.
That's who it is.
And then they're looking...
Doesn't matter, because they all die real fast.
They're all gonna die. So then they're
Everybody's married, and everyone loses their spouse. Oh, by the way, can we just jump to the fact that everybody fucking dies?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the other problem I have with these movies, is that there's no... going in, you know 90% of the people they show are gonna die, if not 100%, like in this movie.
That's why they have 8 characters, because you watch them all get picked off.
Sure, and I get that, because that's the formula. But you can't murder people and expect me to care about them if you don't do anything to make me care about them initially. You know what I'm saying? It's like, they're all just meat people walking around ready to get killed by the xenomorph. So I have no emotional attachment to any of these people, because I know they're all gonna fucking die.
Right.
So it's really difficult, I think, to make these movies and to make them compelling and come up with characters that I'm going to care about, other than, well, I hope they kill this person in a really creative way that's not too disgusting for me to want to look away.
Right. Well, that's what ended up happening with, like, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I remember there was a clear departure, and I don't know if you've seen those.
I've seen parts of, like, one of them. I couldn't tell you what. All I've right. never seen Johnny Depp get eaten by a bed or whatever happened.
Oh, yeah. The first one is great. The first one's a great, great horror movie. And then the second one's a piece of crap because Wes Craven wasn't involved. And then the third one, they bring him back, and that's really good. Patricia Arquette's in that. But then the fourth one, I remember going – it's the only one I think I've seen in the theater. Because I saw the other one's video, and then I went to the fourth one, and it was crap, and I never went back. And I saw the other ones on video. But I remember the fourth one starts with, like, these 5 characters, and they're all graduating high school. And it seemed like they were all written to be assholes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it was written poorly. I think it was written deliberately. So in that scene, you just go, I hate these fucking people.
I can't wait till they die.
So when they die, you're like, hooray!
Right, but then you're rooting for the bad guy.
Yeah.
And what kind of a fucking movie is that?
Right, it's no longer scary. And by that point, Freddy Krueger was such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
That he was the hero of it. So it's just like, let's make some characters you want to die. So when Freddy kills them, you're like, yay, Freddy, you're awesome.
Right.
And... That's when you don't have that emotional connection. I I don't feel like these characters were deliberately written that way, but they were written to just kind of get picked off. What bugs me, and I just want to jump to the end. What bugs me is that there is a twist at the end that's so fucking obvious.
Yeah.
That I was getting annoyed that they didn't reveal it.
Yeah, it was very frustrating. So, the spoiler alert, right. There's a good Fassbender in this movie and a bad Fassbender in the
movie.
Right,
and we said there's the Fassbender on Fassbender kiss, and then there's a Fassbender on Fassbender fight.
Right, and then one of the good Fassbender allegedly kills the bad Fassbender.
Well, they have each other in like a standoff. Like, yeah. They're beating each other up, and good Fassbender has bad Fassbender on the... I like saying these names. Yeah. Bad Fassbender is on the ground, and good Fassbender has a rock, and he's going to smash his head open. And, Bad Fassbender is slowly reaching for a knife. And then
it cuts away.
Then they cut away, and then one Fassbender comes back, and they're like, good Fassbender, what happened to Bad Fassbender? Oh, he expired. And immediately I'm like, that's Bad Fassbender.
Exactly! And they did a thing in the earlier where he loses his hand.
Yeah.
The good Fassbender, the new model, loses a hand.
Yeah, because
the
aliens take his hand off really quickly.
Right. So then, like, I guess the bad one grabs the knife, stabs the good one, and then cuts off his own hand to double as him.
Right.
And it's like... No one takes 10 minutes in this movie to double check that the identical robot person isn't the murder robot person. They're just like, oh, you say you're the good one? Okay, that's good enough for us.
And granted, like, when they get back to him, there's a huge chase scene, and they're trying to get the ship off the planet, and there's an alien on the ship, and it's trying to kill him. But nobody looks at him suspiciously, and, you know, we say spoiler alert 3 times, but spoiler alert, the end of the movie is there... The only ones that survive are the girl from Fantastic Beasts,
yeah,
and Danny McBride, and they get put in cryogenic
sleep because they're a colony ship. There's like 2,000 sleeping people,
And all the alien movies have cryogenic sleep because they.
Get through space
in that universe. Those ships take years. Yeah,
this is a thing NASA's experimenting with right now.
Aliens?
No, the cryo sleep thing to get to Mars.
But there's like she puts him in, and then she looks at him. She's like, "Oh no, you're a bad Fassbender." First of all, not. There's no giveaway. She just looks at him and goes, oh, you're a bad Fassbender. And
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I knew that a half an hour ago.
Right, because, where were you, lady?
Because you never showed me bad... If this was good Fassbender, we would have seen bad Fassbender die.
Yeah.
So the movie just kind of ends with like, yeah, I've killed everybody. I'm going to affect all the colonists with aliens. And that's the end of the movie. It's like the most down ending since like Planet of the Apes 2. In the original movies, at least Sigourney Weaver survived.
Right.
Or in Alien 3, you haven't seen Alien 3, but I know you don't care about spoilers.
I don't care about spoilers.
They kill off Sigourney Weaver at the end of Alien 3,
uh-huh.
But she does it in a way where she saves everyone from the alien.
Right.
But that doesn't happen in this. It's just like, everybody's dead. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, it's just like a really... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think more than anything... I don't mind if a movie isn't good, as long as it's fun, but this movie was so frustrating, it was, like, constantly taking me out of the... Just sit back and mindless
entertainment. And when I knew it was Bad Fassbender, like, they're on top of the ship, and she's tethered to the ship, and she falls off the ship a bunch of times and swings around like a yo-yo.
Yeah.
And then, like, at the end when she pulls him up, and, like, Fassbender is saving her, I'm like, oh, this is the part where he's gonna try to push her off the ship, and it's gonna be the big fight with Bad Fassbender. And that's going to be a cool ending is, like, the girl from Fantastic Beasts, who's made to look like Sigourney Weaver, is going to fight the robot. And the robot's the real villain because in the original Alien, Ian Holm was the robot that turns on him and tries to kill everybody. And then Lance Henriksen is the robot that everyone thinks is going to turn
on
everybody.
In the second one, right?
Because Ian Holm turned on everybody. And number two, he's Lance Henriksen.
Yeah, he looks evil.
No, the scariest show I ever saw in my life was Millennium. Did you ever see that?
No.
It was a spinoff of The X-Files.
And it was in that universe?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was another show created by Chris Carter. But the idea was that it came out in like 97. And the idea was that the... Y2K was going to destroy the world because there was like a cult.
Remember when we really thought that as a society?
Because
it was
a
strange time.
Because we didn't have problems.
Yeah.
we didn't have 9/11 and Trump.
Right.
and non-ending wars.
Yeah.
But it was about the first season was a lot about serial killers and it was really dark.
Yeah.
And the scariest part of the show was Lance Henriksen was the hero. So there was these characters who were like trapped in a basement and there's a killer coming and they look and they're rescued by Lance Henriksen. He's like, come on with me, I'll save you. And it was terrifying. So everybody thought Lance Henriksen was bad. And then the twist in Aliens was like, no, he's actually really good. And he sacrifices himself. And So I like that we're building up, oh, the robots are really evil. And Fassbender's whole plan is he's good in Prometheus, and he's so angry at the space jockeys that he's like, yeah, Prometheus ends with no mirror piece and Fassbender stealing the big ship from the original aliens and flying off, and they're fine. And then you find out in this movie that they just go to the space jockey planet and dump virus on them and turn all the space jockeys into aliens, which is kind of cool. But then there's but then you also find out, oh, well, Fassbender's crazy, and he also killed Naomi Rapace.
Yeah, but hang on a second. Remember at the end of Prometheus, Fassbender's just like a disembodied head. Right?
I don't remember that. You know what? And I've only seen it a couple months ago. It's a hard movie to remember.
It is. I think at the end of that movie, he's just like a head she carries around. And then they have a line in this movie where, like, she rebuilt me. Out of what? What did she... I assume these robots are built...
out of the other crew members.
Yeah, Jesus. But it's like, where do you get all these extra robot parts? Did the ship they were on was an alien ship, so they wouldn't have extra robot parts on that ship?
They didn't go back to Earth.
They didn't go back to Earth. And as far as I know, that lady wasn't like a mechanical, biological engineer person.
No, she was like an archaeologist. That's why they went to that planet to like find alien archaeologists.
So what the fuck?
Yeah, there's a lot of weird
shit. And then, okay, so if they go back to the what do you call the pioneer guy? The aliens?
The space jockeys. They're known as the space jockeys because of that one that was sitting in that observatory thing.
Yeah.
So,
So they go back to that...
I think they're called, like, the engineer, I think they're...
Yeah,
the
there
engineers,
you go.
I think they're called in Prometheus.
So they go back to that planet. They dump all the aliens on them to turn them all into aliens, right? And they all die. And then where did all those aliens go?
They took over the planet. That's why they were running all over the place.
No, the only aliens we saw on that planet were the ones that came out of the people that got infected.
No, because there was only one. And they shot it, and then when they were in the weeds at night, they were like, there's another one. And then another one jumps out and eats them, and that one was pretty white.
There were two, because one guy gets infected with the girl in the ear. The other guy gets infected on the ship through the nose.
Right, but they kill one, and then there's two they have to worry about.
Oh.
So I think the planet is infested with aliens. It's just we don't run into so many. And here's another problem I have with this movie, is that... it's, again, trying to be two things at once. So it's trying to be Prometheus, which was trying to be an alien prequel and didn't make it. And then it's trying to be, I think I was saying as we were going into the movie, it's trying to be the bridge between Prometheus and the original Alien.
Yeah.
But it's an alien movie. It's not really about the aliens. It's like, the aliens are like Sentinels in X-Men movies. Like, the problem I have with Sentinels are really cool visuals. They're like mutant-killing robots. But there was almost never a Sentinel story in the movie we've seen, or the comics, where it's about Sentinels. It's always about somebody else that is using Sentinels as a weapon. Like in Days of Future Past, it's the government and then Magneto using the Sentinels. And like in the comics, it was like Onslaught takes control of Sentinels. And, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. has Sentinels. And this movie is not about the aliens. It's about... Prometheus is about space jockeys have aliens, and now it's like Michael Fassbender has aliens.
Yeah.
And we're always told this is going to tell you about where aliens came from, but it's always like a subplot in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like this movie shows like, oh, they were these white penis-looking things in Prometheus because they were based on the engineer race.
Right.
And then we finally make one out of Billy Crudup, and then... when he dies, oh, that's a classic alien, and it's black with the ribs.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, so those aliens are what happens when it merges with humans. We find that out, and we see facehuggers, and that's it. And it's like, these are not questions I had.
Right.
And also, it's like, you call the movie Alien, we should have more than 35 minutes in an over 2-hour movie with aliens in it.
And it's like the... some of the stuff that I did like is I like a lot of the philosophical discussion between who's the Mandarin?
Ben Kingsley?
No.
Oh, no, Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce is in this for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, because
in the beginning.
Because he's in Prometheus a lot.
Yeah, he's like
man.
The guy that creates Fassbender as a robot.
Yeah, so there's a flash. It opens with a flashback.
Yeah, and them communicating and talking about like what is life and creation and who's your maker and who's your maker. It's like that stuff's very interesting. And I don't mind them exploring that aspect. And even the stuff with the engineer race, I like all that stuff. I like them seeing this old intergalactic race that's walking around seeding all these planets and playing God. If they dealt with that stuff and focused more on the history of that, I'd be much more interested.
But that's what they did with Prometheus, and people are like, hey, where are the aliens?
No, totally. And I get people are waiting for the aliens, but it's like they focus on a Prometheus, but it's like they're just scratching at it, and it's like, yeah, it's like they're teasing us.
Well, you know what,
something.
I'll bring this back to my original point, because this just hit me. Because that scene opens with Guy Pearce and Michael Fassbender talking about robots and saying, yeah, what is life and, you know, who is your creator. And once again, that makes me say, and I'm going to have to lean back from the microphone because I'm going to yell it.
Yeah.
Why the fuck didn't he make another Blade Runner? Because that's what Blade Runner is about.
Yeah.
And instead, he makes another alien movie that starts to talk about what Blade Runner is supposed to be.
Right.
Even though they're making a Blade Runner movie that they want him to make.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, so, that really spiked him.
Yeah, that's those levels are incredible. I think more than anything, this movie is very frustrating. I'll give it. The visuals are awesome. He's got these sweeping scenes of what this planet looks like and these space shots of the ship flying over a planet. I mean, the guy knows visually what to put into a movie. This guy knows what he's doing.
It took its time getting going, but I was fine with it.
Like, yeah,
like you live on that ship for a while
and I don't mind that.
No, I didn't mind it. You don't really get to know anybody, but you kind of get to like see the ship they live in and like kind
right
of the lifestyle
and that kind of stuff's really cool
it
to see. I think that visual, you know, where, you know, the spaceships aren't all like streamlined and pretty, you know, they're industrial looking and they're dirty and they look like things that actually people live in. I love the aesthetic of Alien, but it's like, it's just this lacking undertone of like substance. It's like a delivery mechanism for a horror movie, and it's like the mechanism is great. It's just like you're delivering this just like shit product, and it just feels like those, you know, even like the Sigourney Weaver, it's like it felt like the whole like the point where the alien's chasing them and it's gonna kill the person. In the original Aliens, it seemed like a lot more interesting ways to get away from the alien, to counter the alien. It shows how formidable the alien is, how much stronger and faster and quicker and more ruthless it is than humans. In this movie, it was basically like, oh, there it is. Let's grab it with a crane. Let's hit it with a truck. Let's, you know, it's like they didn't do anything interesting once the alien, the cat was out of the bag, whatever you call it, and the thing's running around killing people, there was not a single interesting thing they did. You know, they're running around the ship. They've got Fassbender. I think it's good Fassbender. Maybe this was evil Fassbender at the time. He's like controlling and shutting doors and locking the thing in and trying to herd it towards a specific room. Right. Herd it towards an airlock. Do you know what I mean? It's like the alien's not that smart. They could have herded it into an airlock, pressed the button, and game over. But instead, they're like, no, let's take it to this room with these giant trucks caught on chains, and then we'll open an airlock and hope that a truck catches it. And it's like, what the fuck? Just herd it towards a fucking airlock, you know?
Yeah. Although in both the first one and the second one, they push it out the airlock and it can survive in space.
Yeah. For how long though?
Yeah. Well, in the first one, it gets pushed out into space and it starts crawling into the engine, and then she turns the engine on, and that's what finally kills it.
Yeah.
And then the other one, she's got the big,
the robot thing.
The big robot thing, which then James Cameron was like, I can make one seven times the size, an Avatar.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw Avatar, I'm like, why is he doing the Sigourney Weaver thing again?
Yeah.
But then they push that out the airlock, and they're still fighting like while the space is getting sucked
right
out.
And then here's the thing, though. You put it out of the airlock, whether the thing's going to live or not, who fucking cares? It's in the void of space. Yeah. It will never in a million years reach anything. Who cares?
It'll burn like, up on reentry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like there's, you know, oh, it survives in space. It's clean. Hanging onto the ship, sweet. Let it hang out there as long as it wants.
Just don't open that.
Right. It's just like, it's so dumb.
And you speaking of the queen, like, really, granted, the alien queen was an idea Cameron came up with for the second movie, which Ridley Scott was not involved in.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's specifically avoiding it, but Cameron set up the fact that they're like ants, and they all serve the queen, and the queen is the one that lays the eggs, which creates the facehuggers, which grabs people and makes aliens.
Yeah.
And both Prometheus and Alien Covenant talk about the origins of the aliens, and they never mention the queen.
Yeah.
Like, you see, in that hierarchy, when you're explaining how these things work, like, you have to say, okay, we make this queen, and that's what starts the whole thing.
Right.
And the big thing about Alien 3, which I know you haven't seen, is that in the middle of the movie, Sigourney Weaver finds out that she actually has an alien in her, and it's a queen.
Yeah.
And that's why she has to, like, she has to die. Because the queen is so important, but completely ignored in both of these movies.
Yeah.
And again, is it Ridley Scott just going like, they don't have a queen, so let's not talk about it?
Yeah, and I think that's really difficult to make that decision. And this is the problem with these prequels they keep doing for all these like 20-year-old, 30-year-old movies, is like you're in a box.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's only so much you can do before the first Alien movie starts. You know, it's like there's only there's all these rules and stuff set up, and it's like I get they mess up sequels so they can't go forward in time, so the idea is let's go backwards in time. That's like what the X-Men movies have been doing.
Which is funny because we were talking about this when we saw the movie, both owned by Fox.
Yeah.
Oh, also Planet of the Apes, also Fox.
Yeah, and it's
so
like
Fox is
they're
Fox,
idiots. They're Fox, fucking idiots.
They must have conference rooms in Fox where they just draw out timelines and go, where are their holes?
Yeah, because that's what it is. Like, they're just putting slices of movies in between wherever they have a free year.
None of them are entirely satisfying because they're always
bridges.
They're wedging into like smaller and smaller.
Right.
Wedges. I think out of all of those franchises, Planet of the Apes is the most successful because both of those films. They're not perfect films. I love that original Charlton Heston movie.
Yeah.
And if you watch the original movies, it goes off the rails immediately. That second one is fucking insane.
Yeah, that's that probably is the messiest timeline.
And then
timeline.
The third one, they come back in time and start wearing disco suits.
Yeah.
And there's no recovering from that. And then the fourth one has no budget, so they just run around Century City, like with ape masks, and they run up and down the same set of stairs. And then the last one, literally, they're driving a school bus across a field.
Ugh.
They're bad. And the Tim Burton one has nothing to do with anything, and nobody ever watches it. But these two films, they have enough leeway where they're doing really interesting stuff and they're still kind of laddering back up to it.
I think that's haven't seen it yet. Obviously, it hasn't come out yet. But like
War for the Planet of the Apes?
Yeah,
that's
at least
this summer. Yeah.
These Planet of the Apes movie, this will be the third one. It's like the James Franco one was first. That was like number one.
Right.
And then they did a sequel to that, and this is a sequel to that.
Yeah, a sequel with
Felicity. And I stopped caring about these movies after the second one because it's like, okay, yeah, I get it. This is how it started. How many wars do I need to see between humans and apes before I'm like, okay, the apes win, they take over. And we're following the Caesar monkey guy around. He's like the king monkey.
Right.
He has nothing to do with Planet of the Apes. Because that's thousands of years in the future.
Right.
So
But they set it up with that first film was that he was the first genetically engineered ape.
Yeah, and that's interesting.
Intelligent. So we're watching him, and if this is the last film, and I haven't heard that it is or it isn't, fans later on will probably call this the Caesar trilogy. But I think they're interesting films, and again, I feel the way you feel about them. I don't sit around thinking about Planet of the Apes. I don't go, what's going to happen to Caesar? What's that next movie going to be?
Yeah.
In the way I think about, like, what's Spider-Man Homecoming going to be like? What's Star Wars Episode 8 going to be?
Yeah. Because I'll think and ruminate on what Thor 3 is going to look like.
Right.
But I could give a shit what the next Planet of the Apes movie
looks
like.
But I see a trailer for Planet of the Apes. I go, that looks good. Let's go.
Yeah, they do. They look good. Yeah. But I think that's the problem. It suffers from this... you know, franchise idea of like, we have these properties, we can't come up with anything new, so we're just going to make different timeline jumps in this particular franchise. And it's right. Like, I don't know that I'd ever bother seeing another Alien movie after this one, because it's like, well, what is going to be worth the price of admission
right.
anymore,
and,
you know?
And this one, again, like I said, I was in an Alien mood, mostly because Bill Paxton had passed away, and when I saw the trailer for that, I honestly couldn't get any, not that you weren't my first choice, but nobody else
wanted
to go.
No one wants to see it, yeah.
No, my wife didn't want to go. Elliot Serrano, who's a great friend of ours, said, I didn't like Prometheus, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to get a group together, and it ended up being you and me. And the only reason I wanted to see it was because all the trailers and the commercials made it look like the original Alien. And I was like, I just saw those movies, those are great, let's see another one.
Yeah.
And I was disappointed. I don't think it's a bad film. And
yeah, it's not bad, but it's just like...
It was disappointing.
It's pointless, because there's nothing in this movie that you couldn't find in a different alien movie. It's just like the same repeated
and
tropes.
Some things were changed just to change them, but they didn't really fit. Like, why does the alien come out of their back? Why are there spores now?
Just
and
because.
Honestly, if you can make aliens with like pollen, why would you bother making facehuggers?
Right.
Seems like the pollen's way more effective.
It's airborne. That's like the ultimate. Airborne diseases have killed more people on this planet than every war of cancer, murder, you know, nuclear devices, everything. Nothing tops airborne pathogens. That's like the ultimate end goal if you wanted to kill a species.
Right. They show Fassbender over a city and he releases the airborne pathogen.
And it kills everybody.
Thousands of space jockey engineers in like minutes.
Yeah.
And then they're like, nah, you know what? And in this movie, they're like, facehugger's better because it's creepy and it grabs people one at a time.
And it wraps around your throat and it's horrifying. And it's face fucking you.
And it takes a day.
Yeah.
And it makes one.
Right. And then that one could be killed and then you got to start over.
I will say, we're coming up to the end of this. The best thing, maybe it is my greatest thing in the world. I'm not going to set it up as a cue. The best thing about this movie is the Rick and Morty commercial for this movie.
Agreed. Yeah. That was excellent.
Yeah. Where, if you haven't seen it, I believe we posted it on the Facebook page. I've definitely posted it on my page. Rick and Morty go to the ship. Rick is grabbed by a facehugger and it falls off from the toxicity in Rick's blood by all the drugs and alcohol swimming around. Like, yeah, they always tell us not to drink and do drugs, but I guess you should drink them. What do you drink, drugs, Morty? Oh, I'm innocent. It's like 30 seconds.
It's great.
Incredible. But we're also so starved for Rick and Morty.
I know.
Because we got one episode 2 months
ago. Teasing us.
Which I've watched 7 times.
Yeah, it's
great. I can't delete it from my DVR.
It's great. That show's phenomenal.
Yeah, so, this movie, I feel like this movie tides us over between Guardians of the Galaxy and, I guess Wonder Woman is next.
Yeah, and so the early reviews for Wonder Woman, have you heard this, have come out, and they're saying it's the best DC Universe movie they've done, which, granted, isn't saying a lot,
right.
But the early reviews are that it's good.
I hope so, because there have been so many stories about that it was a train wreck.
And yeah. We hear they're reshooting Justice League. They said the Justice League movie has undergone such extensive reshoots that it's completely different than the original version.
And sometimes that works.
Yeah.
There are...
It's DC, so probably not this time.
Reshoots usually mean, oh, this thing's in trouble and they're just trying to save it. But like the original Men in Black went through extensive reshoots. They rewrote the script after it was shot. There's a lot of weird dubbing and like dialogue from behind a person's head.
Yeah.
In that movie. But that movie
works
beautifully and you never notice it because they made it better. So I'm hoping, but you know, dude, we keep getting burned.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody said, oh, Suicide Squad's going to be the good one. Batman versus Superman was bad, but this will be good. And Suicide Squad was better than Batman versus Superman, and that's all I can
much.
Say. No. So,
and I like that movie, and even I'm just like, oh.
You still like that movie on reflection?
Well, I've only seen it the one time, so maybe I have to see it again. But
I'll lend you that Blu-ray, too.
Yeah, lend me that.
Because I also don't care if it comes back.
It was fun, you know?
Yeah, I'm hoping good things for Wonder Woman. We will have a Wonder Woman episode. Regardless, we're definitely doing that.
Yeah.
We've already got our guests lined up. So that'll be in another week or two. I would say if you're looking for aliens, just go watch the original 2 again.
Yeah, there you go. And just pretend that it ends with 2.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you want to follow me, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That's the official Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. You can like our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/caffeinatedcomics. That's where we post all our news. And you can listen to every episode on iTunes or on Stitcher or go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. And you can listen to every episode we have made since January 2013.
And how many?
Well over 200. I believe this may be episode 228.
Ooh.
So,
we're coming up. We're going to get our 225th episode soon.
Ooh,
we should do it.
Yeah, 25th anniversary, 250th.
Yeah,
episode.
There you go.
We'll do that. And, Steven's not there. But
yeah,
but he owns a store.
Yeah, I own 2. You can find me at 19 South LaGrange Road on, I don't know. I'm never really there. But, you know, when I am there, I'll argue with you about all kinds of stuff.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.